Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. And welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. I'm Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. The holidays are sneaking up on us. We have some alternative thoughts about some of your Christmas, Thanksgiving, holiday menus. We've got all kinds of traditions we want to consider, of course, but we've got some little twists to add to things. This past weekend, there was Christmas coming to downtown Ames. The Octagon Festival of the Trees opened up, so you can catch that all the way now until Christmas. There was the downtown snow magic and the tree lighting, and there was a Santa sighting also.
And the weather has been right in tune with the whole thing.
Right in tune.
Ready or not, here we come.
It's time to gather around the table. We're going to be talking about turkey, cranberries, potatoes and gravy, pumpkin variations, and polenta.
All the usuals.
This past weekend, Donna and I, and a whole bunch of other people, attended a PFI field day. That's Practical Farmers of Iowa field day at Early Morning Harvest Farm,
which is in Panora, beautiful Panora.
Yes, that is southwest of here. Quite a hike, especially on those snowy roads.
It was very picturesque, though, boy, with the wind blowing and the snow coming in and all the corn stubble in the fields.
Right. We went to visit Earl and Jeff Hafner's farm. Besides being
a father-son combo, with both of the mother and the daughter-in-law and the grandmother, everybody was there.
Right. They do a lot of different things. They have a diversified cow-calf hog operation, certified organic corn.
And other grains.
Right. And Early Morning Harvest also has a grain milling business there and a wonderful, wonderful greenhouse that produces garden fresh vegetables, and they do some pastured poultry for eggs. And they grow a lot of their own flours that they mill, made from certain.
No, they don't grow the flours. They grow the grains.
Oh, they grow
to make the flours.
Oh, thank you. Anyway, wait. They showed us all of that stuff. A lot of people went there. Donna was there cooking up a storm. We met all sorts kinds of people there.
And I was luring people into the polenta. They sold out on their polenta after they tasted what we had. It was delicious.
Good for you. We'll be learning about corn and polenta and all that kind of things. The field trip also was a really nice opportunity to look into the Early Morning Harvest hydroponic garden. It's a wonderful combination of fish and greens. And this time of year,
It was like being transported to a tropical island right in the middle of the winter snowstorm.
I met a really nice worker there named Rachel Fetz, and she told me a little bit about the operation. All right, here we are, PFI Field Day at Earl Hafner's Early Morning Harvest Farm, and your name is?
Rachel.
And you are a worker here. Actually, we are standing in a wonderful warm greenhouse. It is snowing outside. There is a fish pond bubbling at my feet, and there's green and growing things. Can you explain what we're seeing here, Rachel?
We are looking at the aquaponics system. We have lots of lettuce, herbs, chard, tomatoes, kale, basil, tons of stuff, and it all runs on the fish water.
Fish water. That sounds like it ought to be good for plants. Where does the fish water come from?
The fish.
So fish are also part of this system.
Yes, we have 8 or 9 giant tanks of fish, and all that water is run through tubing, which waters all of our plants.
They look really healthy here. The tomatoes are actually above our heads, and the tomatoes aren't red yet. Do you plan on getting them red, or do you paint them for Christmas, or what?
They do redden up, and we harvest every week, so we always have lots of produce every week to go out to the markets and to people that want that.
So summer never ends here.
It doesn't. It's usually quite warm in here, and even in the middle of the winter, I can break into a sweat working.
Where can people find your greens to eat? Where do you market?
Different grocery stores. I know Hy-Vee carries some. A lot of local areas.
And we should look for the Early Morning Harvest brand. That's what it is, Early Morning Harvest.
Yes, the Early Morning Harvest label.
Oh, do you eat the nasturtium leaves?
We do. You can eat the leaves and the flower. And it's fun to eat the flowers. I always think it gives me a couple seconds of heartburn because they're pretty spicy like a radish.
Yes, yes.
We send out an email every week.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to look into it.
That was Rachel Fetz at Early Morning Harvest Hydroponic Garden. What a nice place to be. In that garden, as I was talking to Rachel, I noticed big pots of herbs hanging from the ceiling, and it was wonderful to see all that green. One of the things they were growing lots of was sage. I bet you could put that to good use, couldn't you, Donna?
Oh, we're gonna have a sage rant here. First of all, she didn't mention that in Ames, you can order Early Morning Harvest products through Farm to Folk, so we do have access to it. So they did have a lot of sage. I am ordering a full pound of sage leaves because I'm going to make brown butter sage. Now, I think we've talked about it before, but let me quickly tell you what the concept is. You take the stems off, the fresh only. This doesn't really work with dried. You take the stems off the fresh sage and you put it in a skillet with a lot of butter. The more sage, the more butter, and you just cook it until the leaves get really crispy and dark, almost black. And that is, it's not brown, it's actually black. Just short of burning. So then you let it cool off and you can crumble the leaves between your fingers back into the butter. And that actually is going to be the dominant note in my stuffing this year. You can also, it preserves the sage quite a while. I mean, you could actually freeze it if you wanted to, but having that brown butter sage is so nice for all kinds of, even on pasta, it's delicious. I think I might even go so far as to say you could make a brown butter sage and maple ice cream with it.
See, already thinking of the whole
meal.
Oh,
me and my sweet tooth. What can I say? But they did have a lot of good sage, and I was delighted to see it because I kept thinking, where am I going to get enough sage to do this? Because, of course, when that cold snuck in, I neglected to have a good stash of sage. And then if you have to buy it at the grocery store, it comes from Mariposa. And not that I don't appreciate the fresh herbs any place I can get them in the winter, but you get about one sprig per package or something, and it's, it would cost a fortune to make it that way. So sage was abundant in the Early Morning Harvest. I started to say warehouse. Greenhouse. There we go.
So this is going to go with turkey and gravy and all kinds of good things.
Oh, yes. Be great in the gravy, too.
Do you have any ideas about turkeys?
Well, there are so many methods for cooking the turkey. I personally am, I have to say, I've never eaten a deep-fried turkey. I'm sure it's good, but it just sounds like such a piece of work. And nor do I brine. I figure if you buy a good turkey, now that's, open to debate what's really good. But I'm going to use the ones from Ferndale Market. They come from near Minneapolis. And they're not perfect, but they're really good. I'd rather have a home-raised heritage turkey.
It's a good, tasty turkey.
How do you cook yours?
I don't brine either, although a friend is going to make a brine turkey for us this year, so I'll be able to taste a brine turkey. I just put it in a hot oven to start with, turn it down, and
you cover it. You baste?
I cover it
with tinfoil.
I've got a really large turkey roaster with a nice cover on it.
Oh, the non-electric kind.
No, it's the kind that goes in the oven, and it's one of those put it in there, forget it, while I can fuss with other things. I like setting a nice table and all that kind of stuff that goes along with a festival.
Well, I take great pains with my stuffing, so by the time I get it in the oven, I used to before, my mother has had the family turkey roaster for years, which I have now fortunately inherited. And she used to say, I don't know why I keep this thing. I should throw it. I say, no, Mom, don't throw it away. So this this turkey roaster is older than I am, as a matter of fact. But it still works perfectly. But before I got the roaster, I used to sort of just put it in a big pan and then make a tent out of two pieces of aluminum foil,
that
kind
works.
Of folded together.
That works.
Because
that
moist cooking means you don't have to baste.
Right.
And then you pull it off in the last, half an hour, and then you can baste with the pan juices and stuff like that.
And then it gets pretty if it roasts a little bit.
Yeah.
Talk about dressing variations.
Oh,
Everyone has their own recipe. But there's so many things you can do with dressing.
Well, this year I'm cooking for someone who is very specific about what they want in the dressing. So they just really want bread, nuts, onions. That's where I'm going to put the brown butter sage. I think that will really kick the flavor amazingly. So I usually dry my own breadcrumbs because, you can buy them pre-seasoned, but since I'm such a seasoning fanatic, I like to pick my own seasonings. Or I'm going to see if you're going to buy the dried ones, just still add more seasoning, There's no such thing as too much marjoram. I didn't say margarine. I said marjoram. And I tend to use sage, marjoram, sometimes rosemary. Certainly if you can put even basil. If you want to fruit it up, you can put diced apples, raisins. Then you might want to put nutmeg in it too. What else? Nuts. All kinds of nuts you can put in.
Another possibility is if you just so happen to have had a good mushroom year and you have some dried mushrooms.
Oh, yes, that's a whole other direction you can go.
Go for it.
Chestnuts are quite good, too, in traditional.
Now, you may not want to put these all in one turkey, but why not? It sounds good.
Yeah.
Also, there's cornmeal dressing. Don't just think about regular white bread. There's other stuff you can do.
Well, I do that by making a cornbread and then cutting it up into cubes and then, toasting it in the oven and then putting in the dressing. I was telling Lana I used to know of a celebrity whose name I can't even remember right now. She was the neighbor of a friend. But on Thanksgiving, she went to our favorite tamale store and just bought tamales and just stuffed them in the cavity. And it was really good.
Oh, that sounds really good.
It doesn't
good,
have see? To be so difficult.
See, there's your turkey, and it's got this empty space on the inside. Do something with it. Actually, I've been to a Thanksgiving where it was just stuffed with apples, stems and skins and all. The whole thing was apples, and the apples cooked, and there it was.
Yeah, and you can also use oranges and lemons, too, that way, or onions. The other thing we didn't talk about. This is one thing I do have the patience for. There is a way, if you go in towards the tail end and you have it breast side up and you kind of stick your fingers in and loosen the skin from the flesh, you can do this with chickens too, any fowl. You kind of stick your fingers in there and make a cavity between the skin around the breast, and you can go up over the legs as well. So sticking something like garlic butter with marjoram in there, or butter with marjoram and basil the herbs actually sink into the meat rather than just onto the skin. So that is a worthwhile trick.
Ooh, so explore your turkey there, folks. Yes, there's all kinds of places where you can put garlic or other bits. I think
yes, and be sure to make way too much stuffing and roast it in the oven separately. If you just have what fits into the cavity of the turkey, it's never enough.
Yes, cooking stuffing separately in a pan.
Yeah, make a huge batch, completely stuff the turkey, and then now do you sew it up?
No. I do tie the legs together.
I do too. That's exactly what I do. I cross the legs and tie them, and it holds the stuffing in it. And then the extra stuffing goes in a pan and gets roasted later.
Oh, turkeys. Here we are with turkeys. We don't think about turkeys except this time of year. Oh, thank you, Donna. That was great. You're going to be coming in all the way from over by Boone by now. Very good call. Very good call. I've got a little thought about turkeys from Ben Franklin. The good man, Ben Franklin, that was one of the fathers of this fine country. He was a good proponent of marketing, and he thought that the symbol of our country should be a turkey.
And we agree.
Yeah, we think so.
Think what a different country it would be.
Yes.
We have to talk about the symbol of a turkey. To Native Americans, the turkey was the symbol of, like, the giveaway, of generosity, potlatch, if you know what that means. In some tribes, for example, the chief was the poorest man in the tribe because he used all of his assets to take care of everyone. So the turkey is a symbol of the soul of generosity.
Right, right. That's probably why we think about it at Thanksgiving. It feeds us well. Ben Franklin actually, in 1775, made a good case for the rattlesnake as an appropriate symbol for the temper and conduct of America.
Hmm.
The early...
Must have been some political infighting going on.
The early Congress didn't care for that one. He also, the next year, proposed that the symbol of Moses and the Pharaoh should be our symbol.
Yeah, but that's the separation of church and state.
Yeah, but still, it was a let my people go sort of theme. They didn't buy that either. It wasn't until 1782 that Congress adopted the bald eagle, and Franklin was crushed. That was not the right thing. So the bald eagle has been the symbol of America ever since 1782, but
a voracious, carnivorous bird.
Not good. But anyway, Franklin said that the turkey, as opposed to the bald eagle, is a much more respectable bird, and withal a true native of America.
Absolutely.
He is, besides, thought little, though a little vain and silly, a bird of courage, and would not hesitate to attack a grenadier of the British Guards who would presume to invade his farmyard with a red coat on. So there, that's unquote.
Oh, I have a turkey story. I used to have a turkey when I lived in California, and we also had coyotes. And it's true. The turkey would fend off the coyotes, and the chickens would run and hide under the turkey. And if you have ever been whacked by a turkey wing, whether inadvertently or not, they're pretty strong.
So three cheers for the turkey. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI Radio. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI Radio. We're talking about Thanksgiving. So many nice things we can make. And we
can't resist.
And turkey. Thank you, Donna. Gravy, mashed potatoes, and gravy, Donna.
All the trimmings. Thanksgiving is sort of a set menu, and it's anticipated and loved and. Everybody has a completely different set of family recipes, or it does give you, within the framework of the existing menu, it gives you lots of options for changing and tweaking. And gravy is Do you just use the pan juices? I'm the conventional gravy person, though. I must say, I take, you know, you lift the turkey out, and while it's like cooling and setting and getting ready to be carved, I put, usually there's plenty of fat in there, and I don't take any of that away. I just mix a flour into it to make like a mirepoix kind of thickener. Now, at that point, you can really, you can run amok in the calorie department by using cream, but I actually use, I figure it has enough fat, so I usually use either 2% or skim even, but usually 2% milk. You could add water even at that point, and, you know, just keep going. And sometimes if I think it's not, well, you know, you taste for salt and pepper, but you can always add more herbs at that point. But it really, gravy is mastering gravy is no big deal. It's really quite simple. And I urge everyone not to waste those pan juices.
Oh, yes. They belong on top of your potatoes. Mashed potatoes?
Oh, potatoes. Boy, you can add a lot of things. And, of course, we did talk about how we prefer smashed potatoes to mashed potatoes. Because for me, personally, I am too impatient to make them perfectly smooth. Although there are people that are quite good at that. I'm not one of them. So I just take the masher and kind of beat them and make the lumpy mashed potatoes. And I like to leave the skin on my potatoes, which is what you have to do. You know, if you really want truly mashed potatoes, you do have to peel the potatoes.
Right.
And I also like to put all kinds of things into the mashed potatoes. Garlic being the first choice. You can do bacon bits. You can do parsnips. Are quite delicious in mashed potatoes. If you want to really kind of challenge people, you can put rutabaga.
Oh.
Rutabaga and potatoes are wonderful.
That's not a challenge. It makes them pretty.
Well, I think so. You know, some people are a little they have to be introduced properly to rutabaga.
You know? I'll put some gravy on it. They'll love it.
Exactly.
They'll love it.
So I would encourage you to the easiest one to start with is parsnip. It does blend in quite well. And, you know, they kind of start. It looks like mashed potatoes. And they go, oh, what is this? You can't really see them because they're mostly the color of the potatoes. And then there's also the choice of kinds of potatoes. Like we've had a lot of Corolla potatoes around, which is what I'm going to use for Thanksgiving. Is that what you're going to use? Because you have some.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can use the traditional Idahos or Idahos always make great, fluffy, serious mashed potatoes. And then, you know, it depends on, you can roast them and smash them, or you can certainly cook them in water if you really want them light and fluffy, or you got to add milk. Milk and cream and butter, no doubt about it. Actually, potato and dairy make a complete protein. Not that you're going to need extra protein for Thanksgiving, but I can never make potatoes without putting some kind of milk in them.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Another thing that we can have on our Thanksgiving dinner is polenta. Polenta was one of the reasons you went to the PFI field day, and you had your apron on, and you were part of the event. You were giving out samples and cooking, and you had a big pot of polenta. Tell folks
I took
what
my turkey roaster, as a matter of fact.
What's polenta?
All right. Earl at Early Morning Harvest, Earl Hafner, makes great polenta. Somehow the corn that he uses is really, you know, there's corn and there's corn. I think he uses a Blue River hybrid corn, but it really does taste good. It's sweet-ish. I mean, well, compared to some kinds of corn can have a bitter aftertaste. Like you'll see that when you buy a corn flour in the store. I highly recommend whatever variety is that he's using because it doesn't have that slight bitterness that you can often get in a cornbread or a polenta. So since Earl is grinding it himself, polenta can be quite finely ground. Like if you buy a pre-cooked roll of polenta in the store, like they sell it, and you just slice it off, that's pretty fine ground polenta, and it's kind of very smooth. I think it's like baby food. But Earl doesn't even grind his corn flour, but he just bought a cutter, that he's using to cut, like still cut oats. And so he's been cutting the corn on his polenta. So it gets a nice large grit. And that's what we used. And I really, really like it.
Yeah, I was surprised at looking at the polenta that you could see. It's ground up corn. And it looks
like. No, it's not ground. It's chopped.
It's chopped corn. It looks like, my, that looks kind of rough there. But by the time you had cooked it down and cooked it down, and it really didn't take as long as I thought it was going to.
No, it took about 45 minutes. Uh-huh. But it's kind of real. It's really hassle-free. I have to say, I heartily recommend. I mean, we live in corn country. We should be eating polenta. It is the easiest thing in the world. You mix it kind of 2-to-1 liquid to cornmeal, and the liquid can be milk, stock, water, chicken stock, beef stock. You know, whatever. Pick your liquid here. And for this one, I just used water. So the recipe I used the other day for the field day that everyone just loved was you start cooking there's two things. Traditionally, you heat the liquid and then you stir the polenta in. I don't. I start them both cold because then you never get lumps. So I just poured the corn in, put the water on, plugged in the roaster, and as it began to soften, then I added fresh garlic, salt, pepper, marjoram, and garlic. Did I say garlic?
You did.
You can't have polenta with it. No, you can have polenta with garlic. I don't make it without garlic, though. So we put some Alana's garlic in, and then we cooked and cooked and cooked. And when it was done, about 45 minutes later, and this is because it was a big batch. It was a full roaster. We served at least 50 people that day. Then at the very end, Here was the trick, and it just floored people. At Wheatsfield, there is a newish sort of smoked cheese. Now, this is actually naturally hickory smoked. It's not the added liquid smoke flavor. It comes from northern Missouri, and it is aged and distributed through the, what's that cheese company in Kelowna?
Milton.
The Milton Creamery. So this is Milton Creamery, we are so lucky to have them. He's a Mennonite, but he goes around to all the Anabaptist dairy farmers that are making cheese, kind of all in southern Iowa, down into Missouri, and he gets some really fine product, and then he's built a huge aging room, over in Milton, and he's been the bringer of good cheeses. So this was a Jersey milk cheese that was lightly smoked, so I took, I think, 3 pounds of it, grated it, and at the end, I put it right into the polenta. Traditionally, people use Parmesan for polenta, but, you know, this is Iowa corn. It's Missouri cheese, and it was so delicious.
It was dandy. People who are a little leery of eating this strange cooked grain product, absolutely, absolutely.
Yes, they would say, oh, just give me a little, and I'd say, I bet you'll be back for more. And they were.
And they were.
And children ate it. Everybody ate it.
Yep. So think about polenta as an addition to your Thanksgiving table, too. Or any time. If you can cook oatmeal, you can cook polenta.
Exactly.
We talked to Earl Hafner.
This is Earl Hafner. He and his son, Jeff, grow these wonderful corn products that are sold through the brand name of Early Morning Harvest. You can buy them through Farm to Folk. This is for Ames at Wheatsfield. Do we have it in any of the Ames Hy-Vees?
I do not know.
Okay, well, I'll do a little sleuthing on that. Anyway, we're eating corn polenta where I put a slightly smoky cheese and some garlic and marjoram and salt and pepper and butter. That simple. So, Earl, what I want to know is why is your corn so sweet? Is it a varietal thing?
Part of it is, When we search for a variety of corn for our mill, we like it to be flinty, but yet enough starch, you know, starch gives you your flavor and everything, but the flint gives you your texture. So I usually just go to the different grain bins that I have corn in, and I find the variety that I like the best after it goes through the mill.
You use the term flinty. How does one what does a flinty corn look like?
Popcorn.
Popcorn
is very flinty. So the pericarp, the outside edge of the corn, If it's flinty, then you're going to get a better grind.
Now, and these are quite small, really.
Well,
is this a sort of a especially edible variety? Certainly
no,
not
no,
the kind you want to feed the cat.
Just when I go through the cleaner, what I call the scalping stream takes out all the cobs or anything, but it also takes out the great big kernels.
Oh.
You know, so then it goes through the next screen, takes out any of the cracks and splits and bugs or whatever's in the corn.
Uh-huh.
And so you're going to get a average size kernel.
So this is not a particular variety that you planted for flavor?
I could go look it up and find out. It's a Blue River hybrid variety.
Okay.
But we just, every year is different, you know.
Because of the weather, basically?
Because of the environment. So whether you're growing corn, wheat, oats, the protein level and the type of protein in there is different based on the weather and the environment.
Environment meaning?
Mother Nature.
Temperatures. And
temperature, moisture, soil fertility.
Yeah, but your fertility is probably fairly consistent because you're rotating and it's all... Oh, you have different fields that are more fertile? Is that the...
Well, we have different soil types.
Ah, okay.
You know, so in this area, within a field, you can have four different soil types. You can have a real sandy, or you can have the black gumbo type. So
that's why you're actually sorting post-harvest for sweetness?
I don't taste it for sweetness. I go by the quality of the grind.
So you're running it through the mill, and you're, like, visually inspecting it, feeling it.
Yeah.
Because your corn has a really, really delicious... I mean, part of it is because it's so fresh by the time we get it, because it's locally processed.
If I can diverge a little bit, if the neighbor's cows get out 2 miles away, I've had them walk 2 miles to my organic corn.
Some smart cows there.
Literally, if you look at the wildlife, they will hit the organic corn much harder.
Well, I've heard, and I thought it was maybe old wives' tales, that wildlife will eat the normal corn as opposed to the GMO corn.
Well, when deer attack a cornfield, the first thing they eat in the spring is the new shoot coming up, the ear shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the tender cob and the silk and everything. And so they don't really taste the grain then. So that's when they do most of the damage.
Oh, but it's in the plant.
Right.
Like for GMO, it's in every cell of the plant, those BT little guys.
But when the grain gets mature, they will attack a cornfield, an organic cornfield. And I've had turkeys move in.
Come on over, folks. Here's the organic corn, right?
You go into a field and the ears are hanging down in the fall like they are. A turkey will start at the bottom and he'll just shuck it all the way to the top. And you think you got a very nice crop out there, and I've had them take half of a crop between the turkey and the deer if you're close to the timber.
Girl.
But open pollinated is worse. They will take 90% of the crop.
Because it's so good?
Well, open pollinated has a better flavor and all that, you know? So Mother Nature has a way of saying, eat this, you know?
Only us humans are dumb enough to not know.
Well, the biggest thing in our diets, and if you watch the livestock or the wildlife, is they have variety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the biggest thing. If they eat something that's not quite as nutritious, you know, they make up for it over here. You know, so they eat the nettles, all the oddball weeds that we call weeds. They eat because of the higher nutrient value in them.
Well, this is pretty good corn.
It is.
Here in the land of plenty of corn, this is the best. Step right up, folks, and buy your early morning harvest corn polenta.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Earl.
You're welcome. Appreciate you coming to this field.
Oh, my pleasure. Let's get some more ears in here.
Ooh, we've been talking about polenta. It sounds real, real good. Polenta is an Iowa product. It's Iowa product, folks. Think of that for your Thanksgiving table. Polenta is ground corn cooked and really wonderful. What's the difference between polenta and grits, Donna?
Well, corn, as Earl was saying, has a flinty, what's it called?
The outside.
Did he say pericardium? That's like a heart or something.
I know, the outside bits.
It has a skin kind of on the outside that when you're making polenta, you just chop that up or grind it. For grits, it has been soaked off usually in a lye mix. There's a word, I think it's called Nihil mixtilization or something. It's a Mexican, a Spanish word.
Good
Mexican.
Try.
Where, because most of the southern U.S. and down into Mexico, they do that. It does up the protein availability in the corn. So grits, basically, that outer coating has been soaked off, then the grits are dried, and then they're ground. So it is slightly different.
Ah, but still, from corn. I have something to share with you here. A poem by Roy Blunt Jr. called A Song to Grits. When my mind's unsettled, when I don't feel spruce, when my nerves get frazzled, when my flesh gets loose, what knits me back together's grits. Grits with gravy, grits with cheese, grits with bacon, grits with peas, grits with a minimum of 2 over-easy eggs mixed in 'em. Grits, grits, it's grits I sing. Grits fits in with anything. Rich and poor, black and white, Lutheran and Campbellite, Southern Jews, Jesuits, all acknowledge buttered grits. True grits, more grits, fish, grits, and collards. Life is good where grits are swallowed. Grits sits right. That was A Song to Grits by Roy Blunt Jr.
And all of his suggestions for grits can equally apply to polenta.
Yes, enjoy that.
For us Midwesterners.
Enjoy that. That was good. Oh, your favorite Brussels sprout recipe quickly.
Oh, yes. Brussels sprouts. Okay. It's steam up the Brussels sprouts and then kind of take a frying pan, put in the Brussels sprouts already cooked, and fresh dill, lemon juice, butter, and then in the end you put some Parmesan cheese in it. It's delicious.
That's another thing for your table. That sounds good. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI Radio. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about Thanksgiving. And what in the world would Thanksgiving be without cranberries? I have a cranberry relish recipe to share.
This is a really different one, folks.
Yeah.
I have never heard of this. I've never made it. It sounds very interesting.
You can put this on the table next to the cranberries that you just slide out of the can if you'd like, because this is something different. Okay. That has its charms, too. I got this recipe off the radio from NPR radio reporter Susan Stansberg. She used to read it on the air as part of her annual Thanksgiving tradition. She would give this recipe for horseradish cranberry relish. I've made it for years, and I think it's delicious. I suppose some of the rest of you out there have written it down off the radio, because she used to give it almost every year. But I haven't heard it for a long, long time, and it's in the back of my recipe collection.
Are we going to post this?
We are going to post this.
Good.
Horseradish cranberry relish. 2 cups fresh cranberries, 1 small onion, 1/2 cup sugar, 3/4 cup sour cream, 2 tablespoons or more to taste of prepared horseradish. Grind the cranberries and onions. This is raw. Fold in the other ingredients. Put the mixture in a covered container and freeze overnight. The texture is the important thing here. 2 hours before you want to eat it. Take it out of the freezer and let it thaw on the kitchen counter for about, it takes about 2 hours or so. You can mush it up a little bit, but it should be served cool, but not mushy. Stir it lightly and do put it in a pretty dish to serve. This is surprisingly good with holiday turkey, and it goes well with beef and pork, too. So spice up your cranberries with some horseradish.
That sounds very interesting. So it's not cooked at all?
Nope.
But the freezing does break down the cell walls a little bit.
Right. So it's very edible. It's kind of crunchy and cool and yummy, and it's very lovely.
I'll try that.
The freezing does it. And this will be on the Donna Lana Kitchen page on the KHOIFM.org website.
Now, the other thing we're going to put on the recipe website is we each have a version of pumpkin pie. We are going to mess with the tradition here. Lana, tell us about yours.
Something else I found in the back of my recipe book. Quite a number of years ago, I used to go to friends of ours got together, and we would pick a theme and do a theme dinner. It kind of pushed my boundaries, I can tell you. And Southern French evening, and I found this great recipe from Provence. It's pumpkin pie from Provence, a tarte de poitron. I believe that's how you say it.
Anyway, close enough.
Close enough. Pumpkin pie from France. Okay. This is a delightful departure from the usual holiday pumpkin pie. It does not taste like your usual pumpkin pie. This one tastes of oranges and lemons and rum. Prepare a half pie crust, a bottom pie crust, for a 10-inch pie plate. You can use any basic crust recipe for this, or you can make an extra special one by adding extra egg and sugar. If you want a little sweeter crust, you can do that. Preheat your oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. For the filling, 1/4 cup melted butter, 1 can, 15 ounces of pumpkin. Note, make sure to use just the plain pumpkin, not the kind that already
that's
has
already
the,
seasoned. Forget
that has that the traditional the traditional ginger, cinnamon, clove, spice mix. Don't use that. You'll totally defeat this recipe. Just use the plain pumpkin, 1 can. 2 tablespoons flour, 3 large eggs, 1 tablespoon orange blossom water. This is a wonderful floral sort of flavor. Or you can use orange oil concentrate. 3 tablespoons dark rum, 1 teaspoon grated lemon zest, 1 teaspoon grated orange zest, 1/2 cup sugar. Mix the above ingredients and put in the pie shell. Bake at 350 degrees, 45 to 50 minutes. Test the center of the pie with a clean knife to make sure it's done and cool. Topping is optional here, but this is real pretty if you want to fuss. When the pie is cool, top with a handful of finely ground toasted almonds mixed with a tablespoon or so of powdered sugar. And it's a real surprise. It looks like pumpkin pie, but it tastes a little different. There's an alternative pumpkin pie for you.
That's the adult version. For children and everybody else in the family, I actually make a pumpkin cobbler. And this comes from Shepherd's Garden Seeds, Recipes from a Kitchen Garden. I have used this for years and years and years. It's my way of avoiding crust making because this is, we're going to post this, so I'm going to just give it a quick overview of it. First of all, I do not use pumpkin, canned or otherwise. I actually roast buttercup or kabocha squash and then scoop it out. So I've got my pumpkin-ish, but I think the squash is sweeter and a little richer. So I have always used that. So you make the filling like you would a pumpkin pie filling. Eggs, evaporated milk. I actually use cream, white sugar, brown sugar, flour a little bit, cinnamon, ginger, cloves, nutmeg, and salt. Now, I use more cinnamon, more ginger, not more cloves, and a little more nutmeg than they call for. I really kick the spice up, particularly the ginger. And then instead of a crust, you make this little batter, which is butter, flour, sugar, baking powder, salt, low-fat milk, and vanilla. So what you're doing is you take a casserole pan. I usually use about a, what is it, 9 by, what are those kind of elongated rectangle ones? You put it in the oven with a stick of butter. So you melt the butter in the pan.
Oh, my goodness. That's a hopeless.
And,
go for it.
And you have your mixtures ready. Then when they come out, you pour the crust mixture in on top of the butter, and then you pour the pumpkin mixture on top of the batter mixture, and then you dot it with butter and white sugar. And what happens as it cooks is the batter mixture kind of folds up around the edges and gets crispy and buttery, and it's a piece of cake, as one would say. It's very easy to make. And then, of course, you serve with whipped cream. So we will post those recipes. This one is very child-friendly, not the adult version. I was looking at other things that people do with canned pumpkin to improve or change their recipes. And there were one chef, this is all from the Internet, was saying she actually spreads the pumpkin in the can, organic canned pumpkin, as it were, and roasts the pumpkin on a Silpat, which is a silicone baking sheet.
To remove some of the moisture.
Yes, and it does concentrate and sweeten it a bit. Somebody else was talking about straining it. Now, this sounds really tedious to me, but I can imagine that if you strained it and pushed it through a sieve to get some of the fibers of the pumpkin out, that it would be extremely smooth and probably very, very delicious. Another suggestion was, instead of using traditional spices, this would be another adult version, is to use Chinese five spice to flavor it. That would be,
would be a lovely, lovely, five spice powder is a wonderful smell.
I could see doing that for maybe not Thanksgiving, but for like an early December, you know, kind of brunchy thing. I think that would be very interesting. And the other thing that I used to do when I had my sort of, my fussy clientele that wanted no fat, basically, I would, instead of making pumpkin pies, I would make pumpkin custards, where I do what I was going to do for the pie filling, add a little bit more egg, and then cook them in custard cups in a water bath. So basically, you're having pumpkin pie without the calories of the crust. And that does make a very nice, a winter dessert of any sort. And it's still very nutritious because it's got all the pumpkin in it.
Those little custard cups are handy.
So if
you come across some at a garage sale, yes, everyone needs a custard cup or two. I want to say a few words about sticky cookbooks. Your recipe book over here, Donna, it looks like you could – it's like one of those scratch and sniff sort of things.
I opened it up to show Lana my favorite recipe, which I've obviously been cooking a number of years. It's got splatters all over it. We were saying, we could just scrape this off and taste it. There were crumbs in the binding. It is a well-used recipe.
So make notes, and be sure to leave little drips and drips around.
It's a fast and furious recipe, you know.
Yes. Well.
Calendar time. Upcoming events?
There are some upcoming events. The holidays are sneaking up on us.
Oh, yes. It's going to get very, very busy, so be sure to get this all on your calendar.
This Saturday coming up, Wheatsfield is hosting a winter market, Saturday, November 22nd, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the east space, not in the store itself, but there's an extra big room on the east side of Wheatsfield.
Yes, and I will be there buying my Thanksgiving ingredients, some of them.
Produce, meats, jams, eggs, baked goods.
I think I got horseradish there last year.
Oh, goodness. It's in coordination with the Ames Main Street Farmers Market. So all of the folks that you visited all summer, lots of those
same
folks will be there.
Are you going to sell your garlic there?
Yeah, if I have some left, it is going fast and furious. But, yes, I will be there, so come and say hi to me. That's the winter market this Saturday, 10 to 2 at Wheatsfield in Ames.
You know what we can do, Lana? We can have copies of our pie recipes there.
Oh, I can do that.
A little gift to our listeners.
Visit. We'll have copies of our pie recipes. That's just something else I'll remember to pack, of course. Yes, it'll be there. Oh, also on Saturday, November 22nd, Central Iowa Barn Dance here in Ames at the Collegiate Wesley Annex, 130 South Sheldon Avenue. The caller for Saturday evening is Roger Alexander. The band, live music, the band is going to be the Porch Stomper Band. Do come, live music, lively callers. All
What's
dances
the date
are
on
taught,
that again?
All dances are taught.
Oh, November 22nd. Okay.
That's November 22nd. And you can find more information at CentralIowaBarnDance.org, CIBD.org.
Then we're off to December 6th. There's several things going on.
There's another holiday market, and this one is going to be at the Prairie Moon Winery in Ames. Art, design, handmade, vintage stuff, drinks, food, fun, and free admission. That is Saturday, December 6th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. So if you're thinking of gifts for folks, visit these holiday markets. Think of jams. Think of linens. Think of homemade things, folks.
Now, another thing going on the 6th, this is from Angie Carter, whom we had on the show last week, talking about the proposed pipeline that is going to come right through Story County. And we feel that we should all be very informed about what this means for us. Saturday, December 6th at 2 p.m., the Bakken Oil Pipeline Resistance Community Meeting will be at the Ames City Council Chambers. You can enter on Clark Street. It's free and open to all interested in learning more. Irv Kloss of Citizens Climate Lobby, whom we've also had on the show, and many other group in Ames are attending and presenting. And ISU's Dave Swinson, who's an economist, will talk about why this pipeline is not a great idea. And Anna Kruzik and I, both from the ISU Sustainable Ag Student Association, will talk about social justice implications. They will bring petitions and talking points. And Swinson had an article this week in the Cedar Rapids newspaper criticizing the recent economic reports that have put out by the pipeline company. He points out why it's not good math, what they have done. He just says it's bogus. If the oil pipeline company can't get the numbers right, what else are they getting wrong? I will personally be there. I want to know what's going through my backyard. So that is Saturday, December 6th at 2 o'clock in the Ames City Council Chambers.
Yes, we find out a lot of things here. Donna Lana Kitchen is about food and recipes, but it's also about lots of other things. Lots of other things affect our food, affect our community, and we can talk about it.
Can I tell my little story?
Go.
Oh, well, we were having some committee meetings at the station, and some of our community members who had not listened to the show, apparently, thought we were just all little chitty-chatty coffee table kitchen recipes. And I pointed out that we talk a lot about food, politics, agronomy, the really important things, and I realized that we had been dismissed because we have a woman's conversation and perspective. We're heavy duty here, guys. We don't just give you the recipe.
So
we give you all the facts.
If that doesn't get your dander up, I don't know what will. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen with Lana Noctigal.
And Donna Priskintos.
With excellent engineering by
a bunch
Rick
of opinionated
Morrison.
Women.
Yes. So enjoy your Thanksgiving. Try out some of these recipes. Go to the website. You can listen to us on Tuesdays at noon and repeat at 7 o'clock at night. Support KHOI. Tell your friends and family. Enjoy your holidays. Eat good food. Enjoy life.